Accession number 20010, reel 4.
No, as I say, we've got a great admiration for the Polish troops. They're bloody fine fighting troops, and you know, they lost a hell of a lot of men, and it was. Remember the first attack they'd done when that was at the Fourth Battle of Cassino. The first attack they'd done, they actually. Was trying to take point 593, and the casualties terrific. And you know, when we went up with the staff, you had to pull bodies aside, you know, to and the attack obviously failed, so they didn't take the place. They, you know, it failed in that respect. But when they found out that it took, really, where they'd tried to take it, say, with a brigade, they needed a bloody division to do it. This is the way the Germans, you know, were. And they did. They did take it, and there's no question about it. And it was the Poles, really, what took the monastery. And but their first attack was, oh, they lost a terrible lot of men. And after, you know, after that Fourth Battle of Cassino, we moved up to Lake Trasimeno. And actually, I mean, it was more or less a trek. And we didn't see any of the Germans retreated quickly back to the Gothic line, you know, and when we got, we were with the Argylls out of the 4th Indian Div at Arezzo, I think it was, Arezzo. And then we went with the 7th Brigade with the Royal Sussex and crossed the Maratha River. What was it? No, it's the Ronco, I think, with the Royal Sussex. And then we didn't actually go into, it was the Three Pimples, which was the little state in Italy. What was it called?
San Marino.
San Marino, yeah. We took round that. The Germans, you know, left that. And with Royal Sussex there, that is where... oh, that's where after that we went with the Gurkhas. And then we had to do a probe, as I told you, about to where the Gurkhas sorted out a 210mm battery of the Germans behind the lines there. Bloody hell. But it was all amusement. But the old Royal Sussex were good, the old 1st Battalion. There's, so, you know, and then we were with the Garwallis, then with these Gurkhas, and then we got to, what's the name of that? Then we went with the King's Own, and then after the King's Own, oh, that was at Forley. After Forley Aerodrome fell, and that, and, we were with the King's Own, and then the East Surreys came in, right, and we had to take the East Surreys in. It's nothing to do with the blokes, though, but I took this company I was with, loading up the mules. It's my job to check the mule loads to make sure they're not overloaded or anything like that, you see, and going along the line of it, and hanging on. A mule had been loaded with two boxes of grenades and I forget something else. It was a little bit over its 200 pound weight, little bit. But hanging on the bloody thing was a wooden seat, right, shit house seat, with a bucket hanging on the other side. I said to her, who's bloody hell taking this shit out thing up the line? Oh, he said, that's the officer, he said. I said, well, he bloody well ain't taking it out as far as I'm concerned. That mill, if he wants to take it, let him carry it, he's sod himself. So I threw him off. So, because the sergeant laughed. He said he will be bloody pleased. So we moved off, and his batman or something, I think, came up and said to the sergeant, you know, where's... Oh, he said, you better ask the mule sergeant here. So he said, well, what? I said, told him what I am. Cool, he said, you'd be bloody mad. I said, I couldn't care bloody less. I said, that mule, I said, was load on, I'm responsible for the mule. So anyway, this officer came and, oh, he was bleeding mad. What authority do I? I'll get you on a charge of that. Who is your officer? I said, well, there he is, over there, sir. So he goes storming over to old Edwards, who's out of the Manchester Regiment, see. So Edwards comes over and he said, what's this? So he said about me. I said, well, the mule was loaded with grenades, sir, I said, and small arms. I said, and it's, you know, really was a little bit overloaded what it should be. And on it was hanging this bucket. And so Edward said, you're taking a bloody shithouse bucket up into the line? He said, why shouldn't I? He said, we're not on our fucking mule, you know. That's the officer. So that's with the East Surreys that...
What rank was the officer?
What rankles me with the East Surreys was that particularly... The lads were all right. There's nothing wrong with the other lads, you know, that they fought.
But what rank was the officer?
Lieutenant. Just lieutenant, yeah. Yeah. But that was our job, our responsibility to see they weren't overloaded. And another thing, what we used to do, though officially it was the infantry's job really to tie the loads, really, but we didn't like that. We preferred to tie our own loads, let the infantry quartermaster get the loads out, what he wanted, right? Then we'd check the loads and then tie them. And, you know, the infantry lads liked it, they weren't used to tying up. Blinking. And we used to tie our pack ropes, we could do it with a running sort of slip knot. You only had to pull it like that, and the whole thing came apart, and we took our, you know, sort of ropes back. But if they're not tied properly, you had to leave the ropes, you know, on the blasted thing, because you lose your ropes. So that's why we always, my blokes always, I checked each load as it was to make sure, and I'd say to the quartermaster, you know, it's a bit too much here, you know, so. But they were very good. A bloke lived up. I was doing a part-time postman's job in the 60s and up in the Palmer Road area. And up there was old, he was a corporal then, Woodward. He lived up Palmer, right at the Royal Sussex. He was at a casino, and because I met him when I was in the TA down here with the Royal Sussex, and we used to have a laugh about it. He remembered me, you know, at casino, because he was with the Q bloke and with the load business. Isn't it funny? A lot of blokes I met, you know, like that. Even, might not recognise, but you'd start talking and, oh Christ, I wish you him. That sort of thing, you know. And then you really tied it up. But the marvellous thing about it, as I was always interested in the army, is that, Christ, the different regiments we've been with, right, in being the job we were doing, I learnt more about, you know, the job I'm doing, can remember all this, and the great interest it was, and the feeling of the how a lad feels, you know, about his regiment. which they're killing now. They're killing that. And it's a shame, really, because that great esprit de corps thing, you know, blokes would carry on fighting longer. But they're killing it now, by the way, they all this amalgamation and Christ knows what.
So how did the war continue with you after Fawley?
Oh, after Fawley, I got on what they called it LOB'd. That's left out of battle, see. So I was then sent back to B echelon, see? Because I was due, I'd been out abroad 5 years, and I was due then for repatriation back to Britain, see. But LOB'd, he's supposed to be left out of battle, but of course in the case of a mule, what's his name, you had to go up to show, I had a chap taken over, who took over my job, out of the yeomanry, right, sergeant out of the yeomanry. So I had to go up with him to help him, to show him how things were, because he'd come straight, I don't think he'd done any pack work, you know. And I was helping him. So really speaking, I wasn't really left out of battle. We were still in it, you know. But I was there, and I think I left, I think it was the end of November, 44. I was sent back to Naples and then got the ship home. And got home, I remember, just in time, more or less, for Christmas. Landed at Greenock again. And had me leave at Christmas, and then sent up to Scotland again, to the Cairngorms, and there was a mule, a horse pack company training there, British one, training there for Norway invasion, right? And we were under Norwegian officers, which gave me a bloody good bit of training, how to survive in Arctic conditions. How to build sort of snow shelters. How to get, keep in the wind, get out of the way, all this business. And I always remember an issue with a string vest. We're not going, bloody hell. You know, and each sort of doings was almost an inch square hole, string vest. And just keep you warm. I said, oh, bloody well it does. Because the idea of that's next to your body, right? And you've got the clothes on top, and that warm air is like a double glazing sort of thing. It's something marvellous. This is these Norwegian. And it was quite interesting, the training. But as luck would have it, from my point of view, the Germans packed in Norway, so we never had to invade it. So all the animals then were sent down to remount depots, and I was sent down to outside Southampton, Leap depot for troops coming from abroad. And that's really more or less where I finished my service, just working there until the mob came up.
Did you see anything of the V weapons attacks during?
Oh yeah, when I came home, it was just at the latter end of the V ones, and then the V two started. Now I got into trouble really with the powers that be, because when I came back, off me leave at Christmas, got up into Scotland. Telegram arrived, and it was sent by my sister-in-law mainly to get me home. It just said, father died, mother in hospital. And I thought a bloody rocket or something had hit the house. So I immediately got compassionate leave, and I came home. And of course, my father had died, because he'd had a stroke 2 years previously. But he was okay when I came home, but he died in his sleep, in bed with my mother. And that was the reason my mother was all right and my sister was all right. But sister had married, and her husband was in the Middlesex Regiment in Italy. And she was staying with my mother. So anyway, I came and we had the funeral and all this business. And I didn't like to leave them with this bloody rocket. You felt as if you were deserting your family. So I overstayed me leave, see. And, oh, Christ, the police came round and to arrest me, see. And I explained to the police what the problem, and they said, well, look, you go back tomorrow, right, and we won't do anything about it. It'll be up to the military authorities, right. So I said to my mother, look, I want to take you, because she'd so upset over me father dying. I said, I want to take you over to your sister's, my Aunt Lou, right, who lived at Ashford in Middlesex, see, which my mother agreed, and I took her over there, right. My sister went to live with her mother-in-law and father-in-law, and I took my mother over there, and then I went back. Bloody good job I'd done that. Bloody rocket landed in opposite our place. I think it must have been a week or so after. If my father had been alive, it'd have been the time it landed, evidently, as far as I understand, was about 5:15, 5:45 in the morning. He'd have been making tea. They would have all been killed, my sister and all. They would have all been killed. So in one way, it was a thing which, how things work out. If my father hadn't have died, obviously that would have happened. If he died, he had died, and I took my mother away because she was so upset, it saved my sister's life and hers. And, you know, it just seemed funny how things work out.
What was your address in those days?
Well, we lived at Wanstead, which was a part of London, and it was, what was the number of it? Gordon Road it was, we were in. Can't remember exactly the number. Gordon Road. It might have been 30-something. It was about halfway up Gordon Road in Wanstead. And, because we'd moved there before the war from Leighton. So it was a rented place. And it was a terraced house. Right. And,
So where did the V2 hit?
Well, opposite. The houses opposite. More or less right opposite, and blew all them down, blew the, the whole lot down there. And when I got home, because I came home again on Pat Compassionate, and my sister was, so all the people were working, doing the salvaging and everything, and I can't remember any bloody, there must have been going on, I suppose, but I don't know. Everyone seemed to be working, helping each other, and there was no looting or anything. And I had a hell of a lot of bloody books and stuff, which were now be very valuable. Magnets and schoolboys' own library and holiday annuals and all that. And also Britain's soldiers, right? And I managed to, you know, get them, you know, and there's other sort of thing. But it's marvellous to see all these working. My sister all covered in dust and everything. The way they're all working, helping each other and that. My mother was still over at, Ashford. But, as I say, my brothers were still abroad. My brother Vic next to me, he was in Italy. And my other two brothers were prisoners with the Japs.
How after the war did you come into your job painting for Army Pictures?
What for the war?
You often paint pictures for Army people, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
How did you get into all that?
Oh, as I say, first of all, how it all started, I was in commercial art. How it all started, when I left the army, and my brothers had come back from prisoner of war with the Japs, and I think it was in 1948, Lloyd's Register of Shipping didn't have their burgees done over the war years. And my brother's firm, my eldest brother's firm, who he worked for before the war, and he went back to work for, used to do the printing of them.
For what's Lloyd, a burgee?
Yacht burgees for Lloyd's Register of Shipping. But they weren't done. There was 4,000 odd burgees to be done. They got all the griff from all over the world, you know. So my brother, oldest brother, said to me, he knew I was good at art, would I like to have a go at doing that? I said, oh yeah. So I did. And I'd done them all. And through that, I started off in commercial art. And in those days, you could go round to commercial art studios, right, which was available, and I used to do lettering and all that, see. I ended up doing box tops for Disney, right, Mickey Mouse and all this sort of business. Box tops for drinks, games and that, and you'd do the, what's in it. The only thing I found is that you had to wait so long for your bloody money. Pay was all right, but months. And when I worked for Drings, they were a box people in Portsmouth, and I was working for them, and I was 6 bloody months, and I was down here, and I was on mortgage, and I got so bloody worried, I thought, I'll send them a stinking bloody letter, fed up with it. Anyway, I thought, something told me, no, don't do that. Send them a bloody rhyme. See, so I sent a rhyme, and I never forgot it. Dear Messrs. Drings, I've waited so long, waited and waited till me money's all gone. No cheque from you has come to my door, and through your neglect I'm now very poor. I'm sure you will, with generous heart, get your accountant to make a start, to sign up my cheque and send it today, so I can send the bailiffs away. And I got it by return. But without another rhyme, if I'd have been the accountant, I'd have made another rhyme for me. But I got it, and I thought, it's a good idea, you know. To lose your temper, it's not a good thing. By a bit of humour, you can usually get things done, and I found that through my life, and always done it that way. Now, how you're saying I come into the army, it's because, as you know, I was in the Territorial Army. I was still doing this sort of work, painting, right? And down the road here, two doors away, no, door, next door but one, was an artist who painted ships, well known, Leslie Wilcox, who worked for Parker Gallery, see? So I'd done a wood carving in sycamore, which I've got upstairs, bigger than these are mine. And carved it, and I wanted to colour it because a soldier needs colouring to show what the regiment is. So, but I didn't want to lose, it was carved in sycamore, and sycamore's got a lovely grain, but it's not a deep grain like oak. So I wanted to have a dye to, so just dye the colour, you know. Use the colour of the sycamore as anything white, use that, but just dye, wear a red coat or something like that. Anyway, his wife had a shop in Rustington, an art shop. So I go in there and was asking her, you know, about if they got such a thing, and I had the figure. Standing in there was old Les. So old Les said to me, that's sacrilege. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, colour in that. He said, you shouldn't colour that. He said, that's absolute sad. He said, where did you get it? I said, I carved it. He said, you what? I said, I carved it. He said, look, do you do this, you know, a lot? I said, no, I do it as a hobby. See? He said, are you doing anything tomorrow? So I said, why? He said, well, I'm going up to Parker Gallery. I'd like you to come with me and show them what you're doing here. This figure. See? So He said, told me where he was, because I didn't live here then. It was his reason I came to live in this house. So anyway, go into his place, and over the top, there was a double garage, and over the top of the double garage, he had his studio. And the beautiful shipping paintings he'd got up there, see. So, on a, hanging on the wall was a, I should say, not quite as long as this window, and about three quarters the depth of it, a big painting showing a parade of the Queen presenting colours, see, to a regiment. And I looked at it, and it's very, very nicely done, see. But I said to him, oh, I said, I didn't know you'd done, you know, army stuff. I said, oh, he said, yeah. He said, but I hate doing it. He said, I don't like doing the army stuff. So I don't know anything about it. I said, well, when are you going to finish that then? He said, it is finished. Oh, I thought, bloody hell. I said, he got all the bonduks wrong, the rifles and that. The band wasn't in their proper uniform and that. The Queen, you know, the actual painting was good, but the Queen and presenting colours, and that was good. He got the colours not bad. See, so anyway, he said, no, I'm fed up with that. See, I said, it's not the Parosia Day, is it? The Hampshire Regiment. Yeah, he said, how do you know that? I said, well, I said, you know, what you got there on the, what's his name? You've got the Hampshire Regiment colours there. So he said, yeah. He said, I'll show you something. He gets out, bloody wad, with about five sheets of paper, right, all typed. He said, I sent off a transparency of this picture to the regiment in Germany, as they were in Germany then. He said, and this is what I got back. And when I read it, it's all on about our son, you know, what was wrong with it, what should be done to it, what should be so and so and so and so and so and so. I said, well, I can tell you exactly what to do on that. He said, you do it. I said, you're joking. He said, no, you do it. I'll watch you. See? He'd already seen some of the work I'd done, actually. So he said, I'll watch you. So keep my eye on it. Well, I hadn't done any oil painting before, so he taught me a lot, right? I finished this off. He sent the transparency out to the regiment. The regiment were highly delighted with it, and he signed my name under his, right? Because he'd done the bulk of the bloody picture. And I got, because this was way back in 1961, I think it was, 1961. And he gave me £400 for what I'd done, which I thoroughly enjoyed myself with. See? So when Parker, this work came through Parker Gallery, when the regiment picked it up, Les had gone up to Parker Gallery because he dealt with another one there, Albert Newbury, who dealt with his shipping thing and his naval thing. So old Ollie Smith said, you know, that painting the regiment is highly delighted with. So he told them about me. He said, well, that young chap what bought up this wood carving. Yeah, said. Oh, he said, well, I'd like to see him. So Les said, well, he said, you know, it might take, you know, you trying to get me to do the military painting, see? So he said, old Ollie Smith said, well, he said, no, he said, your name is a lot to do with the selling of these things. So anyway, the upshot of it was that I worked with him on military stuff when he got it. See? And one was the landing of the Lancashire Fusiliers at Gallipoli. And he had to do the show, the bloody bar. And he'd tell me where he wanted the figures. And he'd just mark it with a one-inch measuring bolt, one there.